Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Barrel-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today we're talking about the book Swipe, the science behind why we don't finish what we start. We have an author, Tracy Maywitt, on our show with us, and co-host Tim Vanderhey, who unfortunately is not joining us today, but Tracy has assured me that he will take care of everything we have for questions.
You'll do it, David.
All right. That's awesome. Well, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity.
You know, it's a brand new book. It's hit the market. I got to tell you, it's right on point with the topic, and I have to confess, there are times I ask myself why I don't finish certain things. So I have some personal interest in this show today. What got you interested in this topic? What is it that what made you excited about writing it? And maybe a little bit about, you know, why you dug into it so deep.
Yeah, it's an interesting piece because we didn't originally start this book as a book written to the individual. I'm an organizational psychologist, so I focus in studying how people behave in an organization, specifically what causes people to engage or disengage in what's in front of them. And this was based on a lot of studies that we've done over the last actually 14 years on employee engagement. We've seen during the pandemic, we see some changes in engagement. We've seen it over the last little while. And so we really started to research what causes people to not only disengage, but causes them to engage in what they do. So it started out as an organization book, an organization meaning the company. And we did research on 60 million employee survey responses. So this is not a small database. Looking at that database, we found some key elements that cause people to engage and disengage. And as we were researching this and going through it, we found that these are not just organizational concepts. This is just not about work. People are engaging and disengaging in life, families, communities, church organizations, wherever they may be, sports teams. So these principles, we realize, not only apply to the workplace, but they're applying to us as individuals. So, you know, David, as you mentioned that you say this is something written to you, this is written to me. This is my own, what causes me to disengage in something that I used to be excited about. That's really kind of where the book developed. It does certainly apply to organizations, but it also has that individual slant as well that was developed from these organizational motivation concepts.
You mentioned that it affects daily life, whether we realize it or not. What are some of the impacts that you're seeing in regards to not only the workplace, but also to just people in general?
You know, when they hear the title of the book, there are people are saying, oh, yeah, that I need that book. This book is for me. It's very relatable. First of all, we can see various places in our lives where we disengage. You know, we use the term disengagement or engagement in the workplace to mean employee motivation, which is a piece of that. But when we look at our own lives, you know, look at our relationships with family, look at our relationships with loved ones, or look at our relationships in the community. There are places in each one of those where we consciously or unconsciously or subconsciously have disengaged. We're physically present, but emotionally absent. And that could be in all the way from me dealing with my sons. We have four boys. You know, and even though I may be having a conversation with them, I may be 60 miles away in terms of my mind. And so it impacts us. Well, research has shown pretty clearly that even when we do try to focus and pay attention, we only can dedicate about 50% of our minds, our resources to what's in front of us. So naturally, we're predisposed to disengage in what's in front of us.
You know, have you noticed that this research, as you look at it over time, has it increased or decreased? Did COVID create more of an issue of it? Is it more prevalent in the workplace? I think, you know, people say that in general, swiping goes with social media, right? And you just have that, right? That whole, and we have about an attention span of about 6 seconds on anything anymore. You know, what does that all really mean?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because the latest research shows we actually have a shorter attention span than a goldfish. So, you know, we've gone backwards. Let's look at it in two different areas. The first area is in the workplace. So again, I focus in organizational psychology, studying what's going on in the workplace. Through COVID, we saw some interesting things through the pandemic. First of all, employee engagement actually increased during a period of time, which seems completely contrary to what you would think. And what caused that to increase? Well, it was because of a factor that we call, first of all, the attention factor, but intentionality. Now, relationships with managers became much more intentional about their relationships. Instead of just hoping information got to their employees, managers were meeting with employees regularly, updating them. Instead of just passing information through the water cooler, it was very intentional, spending time with employees. So actually employee engagement increased during that period of time. But the fact of this idea we call the Great Resignation has been around forever. I mean, we have some research in the book that dates back to 200 BC when the Roman soldiers became disengaged in their jobs. They would fall asleep. Well, back then, if you fell asleep at the post, you would actually be, through a process called festuarium, you would actually be stoned or clubbed to death. That's something we don't have anymore. You're not stoned or clubbed to death if you fall asleep at work. The other piece here is that it was very difficult for a Roman soldier to go down the road and find a job with the Persian army, whereas today we have the ability to do that. So is this a new concept? No, disengagement is not new by any stretch. But what's happened over the last while is we have opportunities to resolve that disengagement that we didn't have before. We have the opportunity to move down the street and get a new job. We realize we're not going to be fired if we take some time off to do things. So that's what's changed. It's not level of disengagement. Now, on the personal level, the reason why the book is called Swipe is because it relates to technology. The ability to swipe is a metaphor for something, which is we have the ability to move out of something uncomfortable for us. So our minds over the past two decades have been trained that if we see something in front of us, we can move forward. We can swipe past it. If we don't like a news story, we move past it very quickly. We make a very quick judgment call. So that has impacted us very personally. We're used to very, very quick moments to where we make a decision. So between that and what happens in an organization, we have the perfect storm. Our minds have been conditioned to do this over the past two decades. It's what we do. We move out of discomfort. And second of all, we have opportunities to move out of discomfort that have never been there before. So David, it creates this perfect environment for us to move on is really what it does.
And when people are thinking about moving on or they're thinking about doing something different, what are some of the factors maybe in terms of from a workplace perspective, since we're focusing a little bit on that today, that what it really holds them in place? What's the glue? What's the stickiness?
Through our research, there have been a few factors, and the easy acronym here that we use quite often is MAGIC, right? So when these five elements of MAGIC are present, we tend to engage in what's in front of us, whether it's the workplace, our family, goals, whatever that is. So I'll tell you that the acronym is very easy to remember. The first thing is meaning. When what we do, we find meaning in. So if the job itself has meaning beyond just the job itself, then we tend to engage. So there's one of the factors. When meaning is there, we will engage. Second piece is autonomy, especially today. The ability to work in the way we choose to work. We're not talking about anarchy here. We're talking about I get the job done. I function under specific parameters, but I choose the way to do this. That's key to engagement. Autonomy. Next one is growth. When I'm not stagnating, when I'm finding like I'm developing myself, being better than I was yesterday, I will engage in what's in front of me. If I feel like I'm stagnating, I will disengage. The next piece is impact. So that's the I. When I see results of my effort, rather than just spinning my wheels, I will engage. If I see results of my personal training, I will engage versus I'm not seeing a result on the scale, I will disengage. The last one is connection, and it's bigger than it has ever been before. That, you know, Surgeon General, it was interesting, released some studies not very long ago that the leading source of death, leading cause of death is actually not cancer. It's not physical pieces. It's isolation and loneliness. I will engage in an environment where I feel like I belong. So connection is a sense of belonging to something beyond myself. When those five elements, meaning, autonomy, growth, impact, and connection are present to the degree I want them, I will engage in what's in front of me. So that's where the research has pointed us, is those elements will cause us to engage in what we do.
Very very fascinating. Of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour here on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM and, of course, podcast on all national podcast channels. Today, we're talking about the book Swipe, The Science Behind Why We Don't Finish What We Start. We're talking with one of the authors, Tracy Maylett, and we're talking about magic, right? Magic, that's meaning, right.
Yeah, magic.
Autonomy, growth, impact, and connection, which is very interesting. You know, in the book, in your introduction, you talk about flick, pinch, reverse pinch, swipe, right? Well, you got the information, obviously, in terms of it. Each of those words describe one of the common gestures we use to command capacitive touchscreens, those magical sheets of glass. Do you think that it sped up the process because of the digital age, or do you think it's nothing new, it's just how it's packaged today?
It's a little bit of both, to be honest with you. It has sped up the process significantly. We now have the ability to make that choice. You know, it used to be in the days that we were looking at newspapers, I would have to flip through several pages to make that happen. If I were looking at a map, I would have to find myself and orient myself on the map, where today GPS will tell me right where I'm at. So it's dramatically sped up that process. But the desire to move past things has been with us for a long period of time. It's just much easier to do it today.
Yeah, speed and access to everything, right? In terms of it, and the ability to just have so much choice. We've never had this type of choice
before. Never had this choice before, no.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. You know, you obviously co-wrote this book with Tim. Tell us a little about your relationship, how you two came together with this.
You know, that's an interesting story because Tim and I are absolute complete opposites. I wish he were here. He was not able to join us today. Complete opposites. And Tim is a very well-known ghostwriter. So Tim has ghostwritten a number of New York Times bestsellers. He's written over 60 books. Just a fabulous individual. And I actually started working with Tim about 10 years ago on an original book. And I said, I need somebody who can actually put what I'm thinking into words for me. And so we started working in that. Over a period of time, we've had the opportunity to release a couple of books together. And then this one, we said, you know, it's time that we actually both wrote this together rather than we had that relationship before. Tim comes at it from a different perspective. Tim is not an organizational psychologist. Tim is a journalist. So he looks at it from the journalist perspective, what's going out there in the world. And I look at it from a very organizational standpoint, from a human resources perspective. So that natural combination, I think, led to something in a book that may be a little bit different than what we've experienced before.
That's cool. It's always neat when two people who have, you know, different viewpoints come together to write something, you get an interesting perspective. I have had the opportunity to read the book, and I will tell you, I think it's actually well put together and well thought out. I'll have some questions later in the show, but we'll stick with it right there. You talk about the book being something that there are millions of reasons why people don't finish what we start. And you talk about the undercurrent about the fact there's this emotional connection, all these things with magic, meaning autonomy, growth, impact, and connection. Is it a matter of time, or is it a matter of moment when somebody makes that decision of which one it is?
Yeah, I think moment is key. It's a great word to use. Let's look at some psychology and some neuroscience for just a second. Dr. Daniel Kahneman, who's written some really interesting works, if you have a chance to study his work, Nobel Prize. He's an economist. He has medical background, just fabulous stuff. And he says, instead of looking at the brains in terms of hemispheres and parts of the brains, let's look at the brain in terms of a system or two systems. System one is very reactive. System one is what makes most of our decisions for us. And it's very reflexive. It's not a stop and think about it. So it is, if I put my finger to a hot stove, system one tells me to remove that immediately. Very, very reflexive. In fact, when we're driving down the road, most of our driving is actually system one driving. It's just there. We don't realize that we just passed three traffic lights. By the time we get home, we can't even think about, you know, our path that we took. Very, very reflexive. In fact, over a period of time, that's where mastery comes from, the ability to get that in and just make it rote, routine. You know, and then we
absolutely
have system two. System two is the reflexive piece. System two is somewhat lazy. What that means is if system two can let system one do all the work, it will, because system one takes energy. I mean, true physical energy. It takes it causes us to stop, and it's uncomfortable very often. System one doesn't have to use anything to make a decision. It's just done. Whereas system two causes us to stop, reflect, think. It's tough. This is where we have to make the tough call. So what we've become conditioned to do through, you know, flicking, pinching, swiping, et cetera, is to let System One make these decisions for us. What we're advocating for here is System One's not going to make a great long-term decision for us. If I'm able to swipe out of something very, very quickly, rather than let it sink in, we're going to miss those growth opportunities. System Two is where we grow. System Two is where we learn and we experience the hardships, but it's become much easier and much more common today that we don't let System Two make those decisions. We make reactive, reflexive decisions versus conscious decisions. So when you say moment, I think that's important. That moment, we often don't take that moment because System One takes all this from us and the other part of our minds don't allow us to make it happen.
Yeah, I was just thinking and reflecting upon the fact that there are a lot of times I'm not sure how I get from point A to point B because my brain is just, it's automatic. I do the drive so many times. And sometimes I do the drive and not realize I was going somewhere else at the time and have to turn around to go somewhere else because it's just exactly habit, right? That morning when you go. So that certainly makes sense. We're talking about the book, Swipe, The Science Behind Why We Don't Finish What We Start. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Don't you love that feeling when you've just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, "Oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it?" That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is simple. Sign up in just a few minutes. Tell them about the brands you love and the looks that make you feel great. Stitch Fix is convenient. Get everything delivered right to you. Get started today at stitchfix.com. Stitch Fix. Personal styling for everybody.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerHour.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about genetically modified ingredients?
Don't like them.
Artificial flavors and colors?
No thanks.
Clean ingredients.
Now that I like.
When you care about what's in things and what's not, shouldn't your vitamins be clean too? Sundown Vitamins are all clean all the time. Non-GMO, free of gluten and dairy, with colors and flavors from real food. We even have USDA certified Sundown Organics and kids vitamins too. When you're living clean, choose clean with Sundown Vitamins at supermarkets, drugstores, or on Amazon.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Shulo, and today we're talking about the book Swipe, The Science Behind Why We Don't Finish What We Start. One of the authors today is with us, Tracy Maylett. And he is describing with us some very interesting stuff about the psychology behind this science. Tracy, one of the questions I have is in the book, it talks about chapter one, The Graveyard of Abandoned Dreams. And you talk about a formula for unhappiness. It was, by the way, after a nerd alert, and I said during the break, I said I thought the nerd alert's kind of humorous, but this was after a nerd alert, but it talks about the formula of unhappiness. I thought what was interesting in this is that psychiatry even has a term to describe how we feel when we leave things undone. The Zelnick effect. I'm sure I'm off on that. If we are engaged in a task that is interesting but not impossibly difficult, we feel distress or frustration when we don't complete it, and it continues. Is this also the reason why we procrastinate?
Yeah, it is. There are some pieces of procrastination. Procrastination basically says what I'm doing is postponing the unpleasant today and creating an unpleasant future. So with procrastination, the problem is it doesn't go away. That issue that I'm facing today that I'm trying to get out of, that's going to haunt me later on. We think it'll go away and it doesn't. And because of that, we're experiencing two things. Number one is regret for not having tackled it the first time. And second of all, what's happened is we still face that and we're compounding problems. So by swiping, we experience regret, dissatisfaction, things along those lines. And I'm glad you picked up on that effect. By the way, your pronunciation was actually pretty good. These are regrettable omissions, things that we didn't do as well. And it really does lead to that regret in our lives. And so many of us are filled with that regret.
Is that part of the explosion, I'll call it, of the mental health crisis that we're seeing? Is this have an impact to that, or am I going too deep with that?
Well, you know, when you consider mental health, there are so many just different aspects of that. But there is a piece of that that says in today's environment, it's become not only acceptable, but recommended to swipe out of discomfort. I'll give you some examples here. So one of the examples we use is from a very poor movie. So don't go see the movie, but the example is a great one. It's an Adam Sandler film, all right? So back in the 80s, and it was called Click. And it's about a remote control. And the remote control basically is given to him by a stranger that we find out may or may not be the devil later on in the film. And by the way, I will not ruin the movie for you because there's no plot in this whole thing. So what happens is he's given this remote control that allows him to fast forward past those unpleasant moments. And those unpleasant moments start with, for example, sitting in his daughter's dance recital. It's unpleasant. It's not great. Sitting in a waiting room, waiting for something. Even fast forwards past his father's cancer treatments. When he gets to the end of his life, he realizes, A, I don't know. He's gone through a divorce. Realizes, I don't know my family. I've not built this relationship with my family. I don't know anything about them. I don't know anything about myself. And the moral of that whole story is that if we had the ability to swipe past these environments that are allowing us to grow and become who we are, we run into challenges. So relating this back into mental health, I am who I am today because of the challenges that I faced. You are, David, who you are today, not because of everything going rosy, but because you had some challenges that you dealt with. One of the problems that we're facing often in mental health today is that some of us are not willing to confront those challenges. We want to get past them in those very things that would cause us to be who we are. And we spend so much of our time moving past those opportunities for growth that we can't develop that muscle. We can't develop that resilience. And that certainly leads to mental health challenges down the road. We're not talking about the physical mental health problems. We're talking about problems that built up with us over a period of time. Now, this happens in the organization as well. We expect to be promoted throughout the organization, but the moment we run into something that's difficult, we swipe out of it, not having the opportunity to grow. I am a human resources professional. I'm good at what I do because I've ended up in court a couple of times representing a company with employees. I've had some bad experiences where I've had to fire some people who have not worked out. Those experiences have made me who I am today. Swiping past those doesn't allow me that growth to be who I am.
You know, in continuing in that first chapter, you go to how not to swipe. And I thought this was interesting. Use an acronym, which again, found humorous. Hello, Harry Belafonte inspired acronym. And I got to tell you, there's probably about, I don't know, 50% of the population listening to this has no idea who that is. DAO, which of course is which is don't assume you're an outlier. Explain that a little bit more.
The idea of don't assume the outlier is that oftentimes, and this is also related to mental health as well, we consider that what we think that what we're confronting is something that other people have not experienced. If we've not done this before, we assume others haven't done this before, and that we can just get past it, when the reality is it's grueling, hard study, making sure you go through some of these difficulties. Don't assume that you're smarter than other people, you're braver than other people, you're more prepared, more gifted. Understand that this is something that's part of life. You know, you're going to go through challenges that make this happen. Don't assume that just because you who you are, that you're not going to have to deal with these challenges. They're going to be there. You'll be much better prepared to deal with what's coming at you if you just realize that factor. You know, don't assume that you're the only person. Don't assume that you're the outlier here, that you really can do this. Yeah, congratulations, you are a special individual, but you also have to go through challenges to grow. Don't assume that you're going to be able to learn to play the violin after just 2 hours of practice. You're not the exception in many of those cases.
Tracy, how involved should HR professionals, should managers, leaders be in helping them in that process? I think there's a lot of questions about today, the challenge of, you know, finding talent, keeping talent. And of course, engagement is a big part of this equation. And we teach managers and leaders to be caring leaders and helping and understanding them through the process, right? Caring about them, caring about the success, caring about their family, about them caring about you, and really making that connection. How much should they be involved in this, or how much is it really the employee's obligation to do part of that as well? Because I hear both sides from HR professionals all the time.
Sure. And understand that I am an HR professional. I get this. And so what I'm about to say is issued with, I may have to cover my head when I say this a little bit because so here's the deal. Let's talk what happens with an employee engagement survey for just a second. Let's put it back in the organization. So the company does a survey, wonderful survey. It's well-designed, gives us some great information. So what happens? 8 people get together in a room on the 52nd floor and include HR in the HR survey. And they say, what are we going to do to fix this stuff? And they issue edicts on the top floor. And then HR is sent to go off and make those edicts take place because it's their survey. So what happens is HR goes back and they try to correct all of these things. And HR does a great job and they have tremendous value. There are 2 problems to that. Number one is that engagement is a 50-50 proposition. That's what we call it. So what that means is the organization can create the environment in which people can choose to engage. That's their 50%. But the ultimate choice to engage is up to the employee. So I can create the best working conditions, et cetera, but the employee still owns a good portion of that equation. So let's set that aside for a second. Let's look at the 50% the organization owns. HR has a big part of that. But when you figure it out, the organization can only control, if this were a lever to pull, the lever would only be about 11 to 17% of the overall engagement equation. What that means is at the organizational level, the organization can impact less than 20% of that engagement equation overall. So it's still really important that they do that. HR has a big role in making that happen. But the rest of that equation goes to the manager. You know, really engagement happens from an organization at the manager level. In fact, some of the statistics that we show in the book based on our study is that if I'm a manager who is engaged, my employees are 217% more likely to be engaged in what they do as well. So I, as a manager, have a big impact on engagement. What HR can really do is help those managers understand that, help them understand that part of their responsibility is to bring that magic, help employees find motivation. I, as an HR professional, don't have a significant degree of impact on that employee's engagement. The manager does. Then we take up the piece that we just set aside, which is the 50% owned by the employee. Ultimately, it's the employee's responsibility to choose to engage in what they do. And if they don't, there's not much we can do as an organization.
We're talking with Tracy Maywood. He's one of the authors of Swipe, the new book, and it's talking about the science behind why we don't finish what we start. Of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour. And of course, this is Educational HR Radio. Tracy, as we look, as we go further in the book, it's actually on page 38, we talk about the taxonomy of swipes. The trajectory of a swipe as a malfunction of the will to strive looks at the same regardless of circumstances. And you kind of go through a whole bunch of different types of swipes, the intimidation swipe, the delusional swipe, the inner swipe, the greener grass swipe. There's a whole bunch here. Talk to me a little bit about, at a high level, why do all these matter in regards to breaking these down into different areas?
You know, I appreciate that question because in itself, it does not help us to understand this is this type of swipe, et cetera. What it does is help us to understand, and I think we list probably 7-8 different types of swipe that we have in there, to help people understand that what I thought was getting maybe procrastination or just moving on or making decisions was actually a swipe. So what we're doing in this book is identifying there are lots of different types of swipe that maybe we didn't really understand were swipes before. We thought we were making a decision, and reality is that system one has made that decision for us. It's very reflexive. What we're trying to show by showing those different types of swipes is that these are reflexes. These are not conscious decisions. Our brain's not really making this decision. Our emotion is making a very, very quick decision, and we don't have the chance to go through it. So that's the reason why we list the taxonomy of swipes, is to help people understand that what many of them are doing is actually swiping. They didn't recognize that.
So why is it important to recognize that it's different?
This is a key question. I'm glad you asked it, because, you know, as we look, for example, Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the key aspects for recovery is to be able to understand that I am an alcoholic. One of the key pieces of recovering from the swipe is understanding that I am swiping. I'm not making a decision here. What I'm doing is system one just making a decision. So if I'm feeling discomfort and I'm in front of one of my kids, and that discomfort is I need to have a serious conversation with my teen, and, you know, have a conversation about marijuana or about drugs or whatever it is. And this is a serious conversation and it's uncomfortable for me. And my child's trying to talk to me about something that's uncomfortable, and my mind is back at work. I need to stop and recognize that so I can re-engage. So part of it is the recognition that what I'm doing is actually swiping versus being present in that conversation. Part of this book is about attention. We realize that even when we're really focused, and David, I appreciate as we're going through here, it sounds like you're engaged, you're listening, et cetera. I appreciate that. But the reality is the most I can expect from you is about 50% of your attention. Your mind is going all over the place. And that's not because of who you are. That's because of our minds being that way. So to be able to draw ourselves back to our work, to what's in front of us, is really going to be key.
You know, it's interesting. And of course, as we're doing the show and so forth, I've got different things I'm looking at here from time and all these things. So you're right. Your mind constantly is multitasking. And I think there's a lot of science behind the fact that really, in fact, multitasking is terrible. But and it's not
good. It doesn't actually exist, right?
Right. It doesn't really exist. It's true. Right. But in our heads, we say it's one of the things sometimes we put on our resume. Great multitasker.
Excellent multitasker, right.
Right, which means terrible at doing one thing, just able, you know, able to swipe away our problems in terms of in this particular case.
Right.
Well, you know, we're going to come back and talk about solutions right in the next segment. So we're going to talk about ways that people can really get to the bottom line and make a difference. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, the Healthcare Purchase Alliance, Paper Trails, and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetti.
And I'm Pete McVetti from McVetti's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Wow! What about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plotto and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
With Zillow, you're not just looking for a house. You're looking for the bathroom where you'll give your kids shampoo mohawks. The bonus room you'll turn into a gym and work out in every single day. Starting tomorrow. You're looking for hardwood floors worthy of your signature dance move, the glitchy robot.
You're not just looking for a house. You're looking for a place for your life to happen. And whether buying or renting, Zillow makes it easy with simple smart search features, photos, video walkthroughs, and more. Zillow, find your way home.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and presented by CMAKorea.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. You're listening to Educational HR Radio on the HR Power Hour. It breaks live on Saturdays at 10 a.m. East Coast time, and we're excited and hope you are there to listen. Tracy, I got to tell you, Tracy is the author, of course, of Swipe, The Science Behind Why We Didn't Finish What We Start. And, of course, he's, I should say, one of the co-authors. Tim is not with us here today. But, Tracy, tell me a little bit about, so someone is reading the book, they're going through the process, they're understanding that maybe they recognize this is the problem for them. What are some of the tools that business leaders and executives who want to engage a workforce, how can they help employees do that? And how can employees help themselves?
I'm glad you added that second piece of that equation also. How can employees help themselves? So we talked a little bit about the idea that an employee survey is often addressed at the top levels of the organization, and that's the worst place to address it. It's down at the bottom of the organization. So there are a few things that individuals can do. First of all, understand again that because of technology, because of where we're at, because of opportunities, we are naturally conditioned and predisposed to swiping. It's who we are. Our brains have physically changed because of this over the past couple of decades, that ability to swipe. So first thing you have to understand is we're as an organization at a bit of a disadvantage. So we just understand that's the way it is and that's the way it's going to happen. So what can we do to make it happen? Well, first is you try to tackle organization-wide problems at the top of the organization. You're in the position of least amount of influence to do it there. The key place is to be able to have managers and employees. By the way, some additional statistics along those lines. If I have a negative perception of my manager, I'm 7 times more likely to quit my job than I am if I have a positive perception. So just some interesting side notes there. If I, as a manager, can sit down with an employee and help that employee, or I need to understand, first of all, as a manager, what causes this individual to engage in what's in front of them? Is it what are the priorities that you have? Why is that important? Where do you find those magic keys, meaning autonomy, growth, impact, and connection? And I can sit down with you and help you see how your job has meaning. sit down and understand what areas of autonomy you really want. When we talk about growth, where do you want to go? And where are you seeing impact and where you're not seeing impact? And what part of connection is really important to you? Is it social connection? Is it connection to the mission of what we do? So to be able to have that conversation, I think, is really critical. We actually call those engagement conversations, and very few managers ever have that conversation with an employee. So then to answer your question, when that employee starts sitting down and saying, wow, this is a tough day. I don't like this. So I'm going to confess here something. I love my job. I really love my job. But there's that 10% of my job that is just really nasty and I don't enjoy it at all. So I travel a lot. And if I'm on hour number 13 of a 16-hour flight and you ask me the question, do you love your job? I would say absolutely not. I can't stand my job. But that's just a small piece of what I do. We worked with some surgeons, and they ran a study. We ran an employee engagement survey with those folks, and they said, you know, it's like I'm in the middle of a heart surgery. I'm waking up the patient and saying, how you feeling right now? He said, there's just times that of our job that they're not naturally part of what engages us. That's 10% of anybody's job, at least. So when that 10% hits, if I as a manager can sit down, and I've had that opportunity to sit down with the employee and say, okay, yeah, this is the crappy part of the job. Let's talk about the rest of the job. So how does that piece of your job lead to your growth? How does being in court with an employee that was dissatisfied, how does firing that individual because they weren't performing, how does that lead to meaning? Can you find meaning in that? Is there a reason that causes you to have purpose in your job? So to be able to have those conversations when those tough times hit are absolutely critical. But most relationships with managers and employees aren't like that.
No, it's true. They're not. And of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And podcasts on all major podcast channels. You know, in the book at the end, you talk about what happens when you don't swipe. And it says, when we consider the millions of personnel and professional goals unreached because of the swipe, it is not a stretch to say that worldwide spread ending of the swipe could potentially change society on a personal and business level. While that's a very, very lofty goal there, Tracy, I think let's get to the business context, which is the transformation can be even more profound if teams and departments and organizations and hospitals and everything else go and do this. I'm paraphrasing a little there to be clear. What is the chances? What are we talking about a real movement if this could actually be something that could happen? And what type of real difference could it make individually and for an organization?
Glad you broke those two components out. Let's talk individually first. Daniel Pink released a book last year, which is a great book, The Power of Regret. Really
a very good book. It's a very good book.
He quotes some statistics in there that I think are really interesting, talking about regret. He and his team ran what was called the American Regret Project, if I'm not mistaken. In that project, they interviewed a lot of different people. They ran a survey and they asked the question, how often do you look back on your life and wish you had done things differently? So, David, if I were to ask you that question, I'm sure lots of things come to your mind. Lots of things come to my mind. So the statistics were really interesting. He said only 1% of the respondents indicated that they never engage in that behavior. They never have regrets based on what's happened in the past. About 17% indicated that they did so rarely. So we have 18% there that says, you know, that's not really something I do. That leaves a huge population that said, yeah, I regret lots of things because I didn't do them. 43% said they did it pretty frequently. So overall, 82% of respondents looking back said that it regrets at least a major part of their lives. He also compares this to flossing. He says that means there are more people that have regret than some form of regret than those who floss. So it was really kind of interesting that was there. So to answer your question on a personal level, most of us are experiencing some type of regret in our lives. Regret causes us to face disappointment, to not tackle something the next time that it comes around. We don't build up that resilience that's there. On a personal level, it causes us to miss relationships. It causes us to fast forward past those times in our lives that are so important to us. It causes us not to grow. We don't build that muscle. You know, I am who I am today because of those not always great experiences. In an organization, same thing happens. Organizations grow because of the adversity that's there. They don't grow because everything's gone really well. I'll tell you just a little piece, a personal piece about my organization. So I run a company called DecisionWise. We focus on employee experience. And during the times of COVID, most of our clients that we worked with, a significant number of them didn't have, first of all, they didn't have budgets, but there weren't people to, even in their companies, that they wanted to do these things with. They weren't working focused on the employee experience. They were focused on survival. So during this period of time, our organization, as did most organizations, dropped in revenue, dropped in ability to deliver and things along those lines. I look at that and say, I would have loved to fast forward past that. I really would. But I look at what came out of that experience. Our organization took two paths. We said, we're going to do things in parallel. And two pieces of this. One is we have a plan to survive. Here's our survival plan. We also in parallel have a plan to thrive. Thrive means that we're going to come out of this being better. We develop certain things that we look back today and say, had we not had that adversity that hit us, we would not have some of these things that we have today because of this experience that hit us. If organizations, rather than swiping past that, if they rather than swiping past the adversity, take the opportunity to say, how will this help us grow? They can be much more effective in what they do.
You know, I got to tell you, it sounds so simple. But we all know it's not, right?
It's not. That's why there's a book about it. And so many of us have so much regret, right?
Well, there's 227 pages to the book. So there must be something to say to it, right?
Yeah.
Must be something. No, as I said before, I thought the book was very well done.
Thank you.
Look, when we come back, we're going to take the last 5 minutes, recap a couple of key takeaways from the book and takeaways from today. And then we'll tell certainly everybody where they can get it and so forth. All right. So we'll be right back, Tracy.
Thank
you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust
and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y.
Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and of course, presented by CMAcareer.com and Beryl-Law.com. We're talking about the book Swipe. Why are we talking about the book Swipe? Because it's the science behind why we don't finish what we start. We've had an amazing conversation today with one of the authors, Tracy Maylett. And we're talking about this book because why do we set goals over and over only to fall short? Why do we disengage from things, our jobs that we love? And HR professionals and individuals should really read this book. I'm going to say that because I actually read it. And I can actually tell you that it's a really good read. Tracy, as we think about the show, as we wrap it up today, tell us about two or three key takeaways that somebody will get from the book, what they'll really, really want them to take away, and then maybe a success story.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So one of the key takeaways here, and what we're hoping people leave with, is the understanding of A, what a swipe is. So a swipe is moving past an uncomfortable today in hopes that there'll be a more comfortable future. So it's moving past an uncomfortable moment that causes us to try to move past. It's a very reflexive conversation, very reflective discussion in our mind that takes place. What we're hoping people recognize is many of the things they do are actually swipes. And to be able to stop and say, oh, this is a swipe. We've actually in our office, it's become part of our vernacular. It is, oh, I swiped on this one. And so it is recognizing that. I hope people recognize that. Second piece is I hope people understand that when they do swipe, how damaging that swipe is, how much regret they experience, how much disappointment, and it's not really a solution. So rather than swiping, how do I confront what's in front of me and grow and learn from that? Those are really kind of some two takeaways that I hope people gather from the book. And then finally, the last piece is how do I move out of it, which is the bulk of this of the book. How do I get past that swipe and really actually set out to accomplish what I set out to do?
The key is always follow-up. The key is how you use the material and actually go about changing your daily habits to make that happen. And I thought that is always the key to any success. It takes what's the old saying? You used to take 21 days to form a habit, going way back. I think it's
That's right.
Cubby,
I think like 10,000 hours and things along those lines.
Yeah, something along those lines. Exactly right. Well, look, first of all, I know people will be very interested in where they can get the book. Give us a little bit of where they can find it.
Find them in any traditional bookstore. Very easy to find along those lines. I think they're in the vast majority of bookstores right now. You can find these online at the traditional booksellers, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. Very easy to find. It's available in a couple different formats, e-format, the hard copy, and now as of last week, also available on Audible as well.
No, that's awesome. Look, as I said before, I really appreciate you being on the show, and it's too bad that obviously Tim could not join us today, but I'm sure he's enjoying himself somewhere in the Caribbean, right? Is that where he is? I'm sure when he hears this, he'll go, no, I'm stuck. I'm in a car, but it's okay. It's all good.
Exactly.
Well, you know, when you're not here, you don't get to get shape the narrative. That's just how it is.
That's right. Let's talk about Tim for a while, and he has no defense, right?
Well, thank you again for being on the show. The last thing I tell you is, when's your next book?
You know, Tim and I have actually talked about this. This book was started being written for the organization. And it ended up being written for the individual in the organization. So there is a good possibility that we may follow this up with the organization swipe. There are lots of examples of organizations in their entirety swiping. We mentioned a couple of these in the book and maybe go into more depth in that.
No, that's great. Well, thank you for being on the show. We appreciate it.
David, thank you.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.